Hello, this is Michael Stone, the host of Conversations. We're committed to bringing you leading-edge thinkers in the areas of environmental restoration, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. On our program, we look for positive solutions to local and global issues that leave you touched, moved, and inspired to action. Our weekly guests include local and global experts and concerned citizens working together to heal the wounds that separate, alienate, and marginalize people. Nina Simons is a social entrepreneur and co-CEO and co-founder of Bioneers, who translates her life experience into tools for serving the emerging leadership of others. She currently focuses largely on writing and teaching about women's leadership while cultivating her own, and on leveraging Bioneers' inspiring solutions and stories to make the biggest difference in shifting our collective course. Nina Simons, welcome to Conversations.
Well, thanks so much, Michael. Great to be with you.
It's always good to be with you, love. And you just got back from New York. Tell us about the UN conference that you attended on women's leadership.
Well, it was a remarkable experience. Thanks for asking. I was completely honored and rather surprised to find myself there. It happened through a connection that I have with Jean Shinoda Bolen, who I'm sure many folks out there will know of, the wonderful Jungian analyst who wrote Goddesses in Every Woman and Listen to Mother, Save the Earth. It's something like that. I'm mangling her title. But anyway, so I met with Jean Shinoda Bolen over Christmas time, and she invited me to join her as a delegate at the UN Conference on Women. And I found that I had two simultaneous responses, one of which was that I was terribly honored and flattered at the thought of me being at a UN event, and the other of which was, but the UN doesn't do anything. Why is it worth my time to go there? And so since I know Jean well enough, I asked her, and she said, well, I agree, I carry a lot of the same skepticism about the UN. And she said, the truth is, I don't really go for the UN events. I go because thousands of women leaders gather from all over the world, and there are what's called the parallel events, and so there are workshops and panels that happen all over the city for delegates. And she said, and in that way, you actually get to meet and experience the work of women from all over the world. And she said, that's why I go, because it's so exciting and interesting to meet and hear those women.
Yes, I agree. I was in Copenhagen, and it was very disappointing in many ways, but there were so many things that came out of that, one of which seeing the emerging women standing in a new place of power, as well as the youth movement and the indigenous movement, which is now moving to Bolivia in April for the conference on climate change and Mother Earth rights. So I think there's a lot that can come out of that. And then, of course, the connections that you've made. Let's step back just a little bit and talk about why it's important that right now at this time on the planet, women are empowered to express the full leadership, or the feminine is actually allowed to emerge in leadership roles, is maybe a better way to say it.
Well, I think it's very much a both-and proposition, exactly as you say, Michael. I think that on the one hand, there has never been a more urgent call from the earth and our social systems for all of us, men and women alike, to step more into leadership on behalf of co-creating the world we want to live in. I think we're all aware that many of our environmental life support systems are in serious and accelerating decline, and at the same time, our social relations and warfare is rife upon the earth. And I think really, one of the big affirmations that I experienced at the UN, and I wonder if you felt this at Copenhagen, I suspect so, is that we can't keep looking to our institutions and our governments and imagining that they are going to help us change the world.
Yes.
Because that's not what they're built to do. And also because I think that they are fundamentally corrupt and inoperative. And I think really this is a time where, as so many people have said in so many ways, we are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yes, I so totally agree. Carbon trading is certainly an example of that. It's taken over as a money-making way when the planet is screaming and people are dying and we have all these things happening. I was thinking as you were talking too, Nita, there's a shift that's happening, and it's happening in me. I feel it in my body and my thoughts and my way of even doing radio. One of the things that's plagued us for years, and Bioneers was always the healthy exception to that, which you, of course, are the co-founder of Bioneers, and that is so often in environmental and social justice circles, the talk is around what people are against rather than what we're for. Can you talk about that in relationship to the feminine model and the rise of leadership in women?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's a tall order, but sure, I'll give it a try. I think that we are all products of a patriarchal culture. And whether we are aware of it or not, I think we have been trained and formed and informed really from a very, very early age in how we see and how we relate to the world. And one example of that is just like what you're saying, Michael, that as activists, we tend to get so focused on what we're against that we don't get really clear about what we're for. And if you don't know where you're heading, you're likely to end up in a different,
right,
going on the same direction that you already are on, or lost.
Well, it's also a war-based model, what I'm against.
Yes, exactly. Well, and similarly, I think, I'm very interested in the connections between how we treat ourselves and see ourselves and how we treat others. I think they're all octaves of the same pattern. And, I know it's true for myself, and I suspect for many of us, that aren't we so much better at criticizing than at appreciating?
Yes.
Certainly, I know within myself I am that way, and we're so quick to see, even though there's no mathematical difference between a glass that's half empty and a glass that's half full, we're so quick to go to the negative.
Yeah, I know just my judgments about myself.
Yeah.
I don't really look that, I look what I don't like about me, but I rarely look about what I like, which is really one of the things in your cultivating leadership that you're looking at, isn't it?
Well, it is. We do this 6-day retreat that's designed for women of every age and every ethnicity and every background and every perspective. But it's designed for women who really want to make a difference in the world.
Don't you have one of those coming up really soon?
We do. Thanks for asking.
Tell us about it.
We have one coming up in April, and actually the deadline for applying for it is next Monday.
Ah.
So it's April 25th to 30th, and it's in Sonoma County, actually, at Westerbeck Retreat Center.
Oh, I love Westerbeck.
Yeah, me too. And so we designed a 6-day retreat for women with the explicit purpose of helping every woman who attends to get a clearer sense of her own purpose. Mm. Really, our assumption is that we're all born with a particular, unique assignment in the world, and that only we can actually ferret out and clarify what that assignment is. Mm. And that once you do, it actually unleashes a whole new level of capacity and clarity to all of our decision-making and to how we walk in the world. And so one important agenda of the retreat is that. Another important purpose around it is for all the women who attend to really experience what it's like to be in a group of 18 to 24 women who are authentically, honestly, supportively, and rigorously there to help each other grow into their own best leadership.
Wow.
And, frankly, it's a transformative experience. I hadn't had it that much before I started doing these retreats.
And this is only for women, huh?
Well, sorry, so far. Although we've got a I've got a book coming out in the fall that's actually about how we're reinventing and redefining leadership.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that book.
Yeah, me too. So, and you know, lastly, what the retreat is designed to do is to leave every woman with a sense that she has like a toolkit of practices and that she can refer to ongoingly in her own leadership cultivation. Because really the idea is that leadership isn't a place that you achieve by getting a degree or a job and then you're done. It's something that's a lifelong pursuit. And for me, I hope I'm cultivating my own leadership capacity until the day I die.
Wow. I want to go. How about if I get in drag or something?
Oh, I know. I wish you could come.
I want to talk a lot more about that and expand on particularly those three areas. But I'd also like to set that up. You have some things that I've heard you share before that are very powerful about your own mindset as a leader and how you acculturated a particular perspective that didn't see yourself as a leader. And I think that's relatively common. Can you share your own personal journey about that and how you've become more aware of how to transform that?
Sure. About 13 years ago when I turned 40, we were working with some organizational development consultants, and I was given an assignment to write the story of my relationship to Bioneers. And so I worked on it, and I wrote that story. And when I did, I looked at what I'd written and I realized that I carried a story within me that was that I was supporting my husband and partner Kenny's vision. In other words, I saw myself as the woman behind the man.
Yeah.
And it was sort of simultaneously like being kicked in the stomach and being liberated at the same time to see that. Because what I got was I suddenly had this huge aha that after years and years of saying, oh, it's because the system's against me, it's because, you know, he's competing, it's because, you know, things are set up to get in my way. And after all those years of finding reasons outside myself why I couldn't step out more, it was immensely liberating to realize that I held the keys to my own liberation.
That's amazing. You know, if I think about it too, I would never, ever think about that about you. And I don't think most anyone who's ever heard you speak or knows you would think that. It was an inside job.
Well, exactly. And, you know, what part of what happened for me around that time, Michael, was that I realized that outwardly people saw me as a leader. And I was even getting acknowledgement and awards and things like that in appreciation of my leadership. But I didn't think of myself as a leader at all. And so part of what I really set out to do was to see if I could become more congruent with myself and to try to understand what some of the sources of that incongruence was.
Wow.
Or what they were. And I think a piece of it, I mean, this is something that you alluded to earlier. I really think that we are all living at a time when we have an opportunity to reinvent leadership. And part of what I began to realize when we started offering these trainings was that women would call us up and they would say, well, yes, I'd love to learn some things with a great group of committed, smart, engaged women. But I'm not so sure about this leadership thing. I don't know if that's for me.
Mm.
And so we started really fleshing that out and trying to understand, unpack all of our assumptions about leadership. And what I've come to understand is that I think we all carry a kind of culturally inherited definition of what we expect leadership to look like.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's not a very pretty picture. You know, if you think about what we associate with leadership, what I realized was we imagine leaders as being charismatic and eloquent people who are usually compelling and at the front of the room. They often are people who act solo and often are isolated, in fact, by their leadership.
Often white males.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yes, typically. Yeah. They also often reinforce hierarchical relationships that tend to treat others in disrespectful ways.
Yeah.
They also tend to be in such a mode of overwork and single focus that they often can't maintain any kind of a balanced life. And they also often tend toward a model of self-sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
And really, when you look at that and you take a step back and say, would I aspire to that? Why on earth would anyone in their right mind want to do that?
Yeah. Boy, that's a lot of baggage.
Oh, it is.
Wow.
You know, and really, you know, I feel like I've had this incredible privilege of 20 years of graduate school through Bioneers. And, you know, I never knew that was what I was signing on for, but I got it. And it's meant that I've had so many mentors who are leaders in all walks of life, and most of them haven't ever known that they were mentoring me, you know. But what I've seen from them is that many, many women and some men are really modeling a whole other approach to leadership that is, rather than being motivated by ego or greed, it's motivated by a sense of service and love.
Yeah.
And rather than being hierarchical, it's collaborative. And rather than being conferred from a degree or a job position, it's actually got, it's motivated by its own, a sense of inner authority, you know? So it doesn't come from outside, it comes from inside. And it's really about sharing power and sharing authority and mentoring people and working on behalf of the common good. And I guess this is one of the most important points to me is I don't think of leaders in terms of our inherited definition, as being particularly happy people. But the leaders that I, in my world, and the ones that are my mentors and that I aspire towards, are so fulfilled by doing what they love that it's actually the most joyful way to live your life.
What a new paradigm.
Yeah.
What a wonderful paradigm.
It's the only way I can imagine that we're actually going to be the ones we've been waiting for.
Thinking about the upcoming workshop that you're doing, by the way, how can people find out more?
Thank you. They can email to women@bioneers.org, women plural at bioneers.org, or they can go onto our website at www.bioneers.org and look under projects to women's leadership, and they'll find a flyer that describes the whole thing right there. And again, if you're interested, please act fast because we need applications to be in by next Monday.
So people need to apply in order to get in your
they
screening
do.
That. Yeah, good.
They do.
Good, good.
The reason being that we select a group of women very intentionally for how they can be complementary in terms of diverse perspectives, diverse ages, and diverse ethnicities, because that's really important to us.
Well, isn't that one of the aspects that you're cultivating in women's leadership is honoring diversity, like in nature?
Well, exactly. And I would go even a step further and say this is well beyond honoring diversity. It's about learning how to connect across differences.
Ah, beautiful.
And I think as leaders, both men and women alike, that getting better at connecting across differences is one of the most important leadership skills we could be investing in right now.
I want to talk about some of the three points that you made. And one of those points, you talked about discovering what your personal purpose is. And I think that's really hard for people because whether you're a man or a woman, often we take what's wanted or expected of us, or so many other things influence that, to find our own natural genius or our own what wants to flower in us. How do you go about getting people to discover that place? That's often so buried.
Well, it's a great question. And I need to say here, Michael, that I don't profess to be an expert at this. I'm only sharing my own learning because it seems to keep being useful for others. And it's hard for me to even say my purpose, but I know that I can feel it, and it gets clearer for me every day. And I think part of how we do that is we do a lot of work in twos and threes and fours within the workshop, where women have opportunities to share their stories with each other. And we ask a lot of leading questions. So a lot of what we're seeking to do is to unearth that place within each of us that happened sometime during our childhood and young lives, where we were connected to where we had an experience that really connected us to our joy and that really lit us up.
Mm.
And that's a very important place to revisit. You know, for me, here's a funny story. For me, when I was in high school, I fell in love with theater, and I just thought theater was the best way to change the world I'd ever imagined. And I studied it in college, and I went on to work in professional theater, and then I got very disillusioned because so little of professional theater is really about changing the world. And so I gave up on my dream. And back then, what I called my dream was working in transformational theater. And sometime in the last 10 years, reviewing the arc of my evolution with Bioneers, I realized that I'm working in transformational theater now. You know, it's a shape that I never would have imagined.
Right.
I never could have dreamt of in a million years, but there it is. So somehow, you know, reconnecting to your childhood dream and to those experiences where you knew yourself as a leader.
Yes.
You know,
that's great.
And to trying to just reconnect to that, I think it kind of, you know, this cycles back to the question you asked earlier, Michael, about, you know, being against versus being for. I think that we have so much more practice at beating ourselves up than at appreciating our gifts.
Yes.
And part of what we do a lot of in the retreat is to exercise those muscles and practice. And practice not only appreciating our own gifts, but receiving appreciation from others and trusting their feedback and learning to give feedback in a way that's authentically constructive and that's not, you know, that's not, pardon my language, like a shit sandwich.
Mm.
You know, so often we give feedback that's like, well, you did a really good job, but if only you'd done this, that, and the other.
Right.
You know, and really learning how to say, you know, when you said this in that way, I was really moved. And what I'd like to hear more of is you're talking about this part of your journey. And when we give each other that kind of feedback, it expands us.
This is really moving into the support groups that you create. People practice these practices, not only within the support group, but it's a safe place that you create in your Cultivating Women's Leadership workshop, that you begin to cultivate that. Is that what I'm hearing? And maybe you could tell our listeners some of the other practices that you use to continue to cultivate and liberate our own potential leadership and the power of that.
Well, sure. I mean, yes, I think what you're observing is right, Michael, in that we do collectively, we create a very safe space for women to enter into their deepest authentic selves. And of course, we don't have that many opportunities. When in your life can you spend six focused days working on your own leadership, you know?
Mm.
Just doesn't happen very often.
Especially with you.
Thank you.
I am going to come in drag, I think.
And especially with just an amazing group of women.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you know, the truth is, we facilitate the training and we've dreamed it up and we've created a sequence of experiences that time has shown us work really, really well. But it's the women who expand each other. And, let's see, some other examples. Well, we develop some practices, like every morning we have a check-in about composting and putting into the cauldron. So it's about making intentional that process that actually, you know, biologically our bodies are renewing themselves all the time. And I don't remember how many layers of skin we shed and regrow, you know, but on a cellular level, there is a lot of birth and death happening in our bodies all the time. And so what we're seeking to do is develop a practice of cultivating our own awareness and our own leadership in a conscious way, which means what are the patterns that I'm seeing in myself that I consciously know I want to shed because they're not helping me?
No.
And what are the parts of myself that I want to grow because I can see that I'm not as strong there as I want to become? And, you know, really my own experience is that that awareness, if it can become a practice that you think about every day and often several times a day, it will change us all. Anything that you practice with that kind of focus and intention does have a really good shot at actually creating change.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and you also talk about leaving the women with a toolkit of practices.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, we've all been to so many workshops and we get just all high and, you know, make declarations and then it just kind of fizzles out. So really important to have some kind of something afterwards that sustains you. How do you sustain the things that open up for people in your workshops afterwards?
Well, again, I think this is very personal, and different women have chosen to continue it in very different ways. You know, everyone is asked to bring a journal, and so as we do all these exercises and we give out a folder, you know, so we do exercises that have to do with doing a life balance assessment. And that's a really useful tool because all of us aspire to be in balance all the time. And I don't know almost anybody who I think actually is, you know, so that's a tool. We have other tools like we do a practice that actually comes from the Rockwood Leadership Program that's called Difficult Conversations.
Mm.
And for many of us, we've been taught to avoid conflict at almost any cost. From a very early age. And so we teach women how to go into a difficult conversation, how to choose it, and how to step through that process in a way that has the best likelihood of giving you the results you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's something that, whether it's in your personal life or your work life or your family, we're all facing difficult conversations all the time. You know, so that's another example.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And, you know, what we've been really, one of the things, Michael, that I've come to find is that I think about the masculine and the feminine as compassion and rigor. And it helps me to take them out of the gender association sometimes. And so we've been really rigorous in getting feedback from every woman who's ever taken this training and getting feedback again a year later and 2 years later and 3 years later. And what we find is that the women are reporting that for some of them, it's been the ideas and the recognizing new ways to relate to themselves that have been the most transformative.
Yeah.
And for others, it's been the tools and practices. And for yet others, it's been the connection with the women they shared that experience with. So in almost every training that we've done, women come out with some pretty deep connections with other women that are there. And so one of the ways that people sustain the energy and the awareness is by staying connected.
Yes, that's great. Well, I was just thinking about from the natural world, you know, the way you're doing it. You're really looking at each plant needs different minerals, different resources, different amount of light, different environment, different climate. And so you're really approaching this in a very organic way. And I think that's one of the things that is totally unique to your perspective on teaching leadership is you go to the natural world to inform yourself. Can you talk about your relationship to Mother Nature and the Earth as a model for teaching women's leadership or leadership in general?
Well, gosh, that's a beautiful question, Michael. I don't know that anyone's ever asked me that before. And I'm not sure exactly how articulate I can be about it, except to say that for me, looking to nature as mentor and model and teacher is so deeply a part of who I am that I do it almost without thinking. And it's also, one of the things that I've been realizing increasingly is that although I don't often call it this, nature is my faith. Nature is my spirituality.
I have to write that down. Nature is my faith. Oh, that's, yeah.
Well, it's just the truth. You know, yeah. It's the most, it's what I love really deeply in a really personal, passionate way. And when I get really blue and really hurting, nature is what has restored me. You know?
But what's brilliant about it is it's totally all-encompassing. It doesn't matter whether you're black, yellow, green, whether you're a Catholic, a Jew, or a Muslim. That's such a huge statement. Nature is my faith. What if that became a runaway... You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it does. It's this beautiful umbrella idea that actually is alive in my heart, not my mind, but it does inform everything about the way I see the world and the way that I see how to heal, really, the damage of the place that we're currently in. And I think, part of the reason that the diversity of the women in each training has become so important to me, and, you'll see when the book comes out, it's just not common enough that we see leadership across the spectrum of ethnicities and across the diversity of disciplines and perspectives and across three or four generations. But in nature, what they've proven is that ecosystems that are rich in diversity are able to heal much more quickly after traumatic events. Mm-hmm. Than ecosystems that are more homogenous and more impoverished of diversity.
Yes.
And since resilience is probably the most important human capacity we could possibly be cultivating, I know in my bones that it's really important that we all get better at loving each other through our differences, and
That's
finding
beautiful.
Ways to connect. I don't mean to be so new agey about it. It's not just about loving each other. It's about being able to connect and find our common ground.
Yes.
Because in a sense, that polarization across differences is responsible for much of the worst violence in the world.
Yeah. And atrocities.
Certainly, people to people and against women in particular, but people to people. And I think that there is a false separation that many of us have with the natural world, and reconnecting to nature, in a sense, she's really our first mother.
Very real sense.
Yeah, very real, exactly.
One of the things that I would like you to share with people, because whenever you've done it, you leave me in tears. Whenever you're leading a workshop, you take away as much or more than perhaps anyone else in the workshop. And I would like you to share some of the stories from some of your workshops and give us a little flavor of what you learned. I remember you holding somebody, I think, for a very long period of time. Was that with asthma or something?
I can tell that story.
Some of these stories, though, just they exemplify it. And a lot of times for me, I learn by hearing those stories. Mm. And tell us some of the stories that have taught you about the power of leadership and how it's in the new model that you're talking about.
Well, okay. One of the things that actually leading these retreats has helped me to develop more strength around is the reality that all of our relationships and their quality and texture is actually a result of how we move through the cycles of rupture and repair that are true to every relationship in our lives. Yeah. All of us know, right? I mean, any relationship that really matters to you, you have fights, you have ruptures, and how you get through that is what determines the texture of the relationship. And so one of the things that we've learned is that oftentimes with this diverse a group of women, there's a place where things have to erupt. There's a place where somebody feels like they're not being included enough, or that, you know, that something unconscious has happened that they need to call out, or, you know, one way or another, there's some kind of a disruption to the field. And so I've learned to actually move into those disruptions instead of being freaked out and pulling back, like my instincts often say to. And I guess, you know, the story that you alluded to, Michael, is a very powerful one for me. It's still so alive in me. And I've been feeling an increasing call to work on issues related to racial justice. And so last summer, we were in a training in New Mexico, and the training was very powerful, and we had about 40% of the women there were women of color, and they were extraordinary women. And it was literally the very last night of the training, and we had a dance party. And at the end of the party, everyone went to bed, and at 3 in the morning, Toby and I were awoken by the roommate of a woman who was having an asthma attack in the middle of the night. And she was an African-American woman who had grown up in Detroit and had asthma and had forgotten to bring her inhaler. And we were in the middle of nowhere. We were like an hour and a half from the nearest hospital. And I had never been with anybody having an asthma attack before. I had no idea what to do, and neither did Toby. So Toby raced off to do research on the internet to find out if she could learn what was best to do for this woman. And I went to her room, and because there was nothing in my head that I knew could help me, because I had no experience with it before, I decided to still my mind and drop into my body in a way that my body could tell me what to do, and to just trust that. And I wound up holding this woman in as enveloping a way as I could, and rocking her and singing to her. Mm. And again, it was just trusting my instincts. And so I was holding her and rocking her and singing to her. And eventually, and I don't have any illusion that I did this, but eventually her breathing calmed. And, you know, all I could think of while I was holding her was, please, please live. Please keep breathing. Please, please. I just was, I was praying with every cell of my being. Mm. And then slowly I could hear and feel her breathing started to slow and calm, and she started to breathe more deeply. And eventually, as she got her breath back, she laid down. And I sank down to the floor beside her bed, and I realized my face was covered with tears. And I wondered why I was so sad. And I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, relief was pouring through every particle of my being, I felt into what was going on for me, and I realized that in spite of having known for years and years and years about the disproportionate impact on low-income communities in inner cities of toxic industries being sited where they live, in spite of having known about that and known about the increased levels of heart disease and the elevated rates of asthma, you know, in spite of having known that in my head for
As information
for 15 years, that in some way I had some sort of a self-righteous response, like, yes, I should be helping this, I had only understood that through the distance that my privilege afforded me.
Wow.
And in this case, with this woman who I had really come to love over these 5 days, this was the first time that it pierced my heart.
Yeah.
And it just, it landed in me in a whole different way than I had ever, ever grokked it before. And I feel like I'll never be the same.
I think some of our listeners, just from hearing the story, will also have a whole different relationship. And that brings me to another issue, very much related, though, is we talk about how our wounds can be our greatest teacher often, and that it takes enormous amounts of energy to repress those things that we don't want to deal with, don't want to look at. And yet it's very different when your wound is open and raw and you're bleeding, figuratively or literally, and everything that you thought about yourself has been changed somehow, in some way. Talk to us, or maybe share another story about how someone embracing their wound has led to their transformation as a leader.
Well, gosh, the best way I know to respond to that is to say that somewhere along the way in my own leadership exploration, what I realized was that there was one woman who actually embodied the kind of leadership that I aspired to more than anyone else. And that woman was Terry Tempest Williams, the author.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know her well personally. I just knew her a little bit. But every time that I read her writing or every time that I saw her speak, what she did was, my inner phrase for it is standing open.
Yeah.
Is that she somehow embodied this quality of revealing and letting us into her most vulnerable place of learning.
Mm-hmm.
But she did it in a way that had so much dignity and strength that it just made me quiver in wanting to be like that.
Yeah.
And really, I think I've read everything that Terry's written. And, you know, she's written about the death of her mother by cancer as paralleled by, you know, the loss of an inland lake. She's written about her profoundly deep questioning of her own spiritual faith, you know, that she was raised a Mormon. And she's written about how and spoken about how she and her father, who are politically at opposite ends of the partisan spectrum, were able to find common ground. And she's written about being absolutely broken open by following a call and going to Rwanda to help create a genocide memorial with an extraordinary artist named Lily Yeh. And every story that Terry's told that way breaks me open in a way that leads me to understand that part of this new leadership that we're all co-creating and co-modeling is about the power and strength of vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's a place that I think counterintuitively, you know, we've all sort of been taught to cover our vulnerability and to not let people see where we're raw.
Yeah,
but I actually think that's what changes people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the task at hand is about changing ourselves so we can change the world.
And can't you always relate to when somebody shares something that to you, maybe not the same thing, but something in you that you haven't been able to say, and just when somebody does that, it's so inspiring. I mean, those are the kind of people that inspire me that I want to follow, and Terry Tempest Williams and you and many other people who have shared that authentic way of being and dealing with something and finding, how can I use this to not only grow but to serve? I think that's a really powerful aspect of it.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I think there's a phrase from Terry's latest book that's really alive in me right now. And she talks a lot about the treatment of prairie dogs.
Oh, yes, I read that. I read that book.
And what she says is that she draws a connection between our capacity for cruelty and our certitude, and by which I think she means our certainty,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's very interesting because I was just listening to a CD that a friend made of a song that she wrote celebrating the power of I don't know, you know? And wouldn't we be better off if many of our current leaders were actually able to honestly say, I don't know.
Yep.
You know, it's that professing to certainty that we don't have that I think actually has gotten us in quite this much trouble.
Well, when we know, we quote, know something, we in essence are murdering the alternatives and the possibilities.
Yeah.
Just by that act of, yes, I know how that is, and that eliminates so many other things.
Well, and we're choosing to be closed instead of open.
Exactly.
And and actually to perpetuate a quote, male model of being focused externally and on certainty rather than inwardly and on receptivity.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I want to be clear, too, that I don't want to demonize the masculine at all. I love men, and I love the masculine. And I actually, you know, for me, it's very clear that the leadership I want to grow into is one where all of us have masculine and feminine within us and are able to access any part of our human selves at any time.
I always feel loved around you, and I know that's true for thousands of men.
Oh, good.
So, no concerns
sort of
there.
The old legacies of the first wave of feminism, you know, that I always feel a little cautious about.
Yeah, that's true. It's been an evolving thing, and I love this model as it's flowering into its own fullness. One of the things that I've had an opportunity to do is to spend a lot of time around David White. And there's a term that I always was inspired about, and that's that he talks about having the courageous conversations. And I've always felt that's such an important aspect of leadership. And without doing the male bashing, without that, how do you help women in your workshops to cultivate the courageous conversations, but God knows there's so many of them that need to be had.
Well, we practice a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we practice speaking our truth. We practice leading from the heart. We actually practice saying how the world will be different as a result of our leadership. You know, which is a very scary thing to do.
Yeah.
But frankly, I think that's what builds our courage, is practicing scary things, because they become a lot less scary the more you practice them.
How in your workshop do you deal with the issue of fear? There's so much fear, and we live in very fearful times. As a researcher, I know myself, I have a very hard time sometimes because I know what's going on in the science world, and it is not computing out there, and lots of people just shut down when I try to speak it. So it's difficult to actually speak about the reality of our times when we look at climate change, at peak oil, at peak resource, at water, all the glaciers, you know, the oceans. It just goes on and on and on and on. And of course, I know you and Kenny are always researching that, as well as myself and many other people that are trying to bring awareness to these issues. But it becomes very fearful, and people really close down. And such an important aspect of leadership is to open up so that we can deal with the reality of our times in a way that makes a difference, rather than try to push it away and just go underground.
Well, I think there are a lot of questions laced into what you just said.
Yes, there are.
And so let me see if I can respond to them. I mean, you know, honestly, I do think that fear and love are kind of opposite ends of a spectrum, and that when we choose fear, we close ourselves down and we limit our possibilities. And one of my favorite mentors, a woman named Diane Wilson, is a fifth-generation shrimper on the Texas Gulf Coast, and she's a mother of five and a woman with a high school education. And when she found out that her county in Texas was the most toxic in the nation, she just about went ballistic. And she trained herself to file legal briefs. And she started a nonprofit, and she actually went up against multinational chemical corporations and got them to sign zero discharge agreements.
Wow.
In defense of the bay, which was one of her deep, deep loves. And so she's a great inspiration to me. And one day when she was doing a plenary at Bioneers, she spoke from the stage. And by the way, folks who are listening, there are a lot of excerpts on YouTube. So if you just search Bioneers on YouTube, you'll find all kinds of goodies. So she said during that talk, she said, "The way that I know I'm on track is that I smell my fear and I head straight for it." And I remember thinking at the time, what a lot of macho crap. I kind of laughed and I said, God, that's really ridiculous. Does she mean that? And days and weeks later, I was still thinking about it. And what I found was that it was true for me, you know, that the things that I cared most deeply about were the things that I was most fearful of saying in public or of writing about. And I think that's a part of exercising our muscle and our capacity for appreciation and self-love is speaking what we most desire, you know? Yes. I think it's also really one of our best pathways to healthy relationship is being able to talk about our needs and our wants. And frankly, you know, our culture has equipped us to talk much more about what we don't like than what we do like.
Yes.
And so so the fear, it is incapacitating for a lot of people. And in a way, the more you learn, the more devastating it becomes. And for me, the only way I know to deal with that is both to give myself permission and practice feeling deeply what arises in me as I learn those things. Because I find that the two emotions that are most likely to come up in me are outrage and grief.
Yep.
And they're both, as a woman, they're both feelings that I've been taught, especially the anger or the outrage, to suppress as soon as I start to feel it. And what I realized in myself is so often when I'm angry, I cry because it's safer to cry than to actually get angry. And so I've been really in a personal inquiry about how to reclaim staying connected to the anger, because I think it's got a tremendous capacity to strengthen us. And also to, you know, that the appropriate response to what's happening in the earth today is to act. And the things that help me to act are feeling the incredible grief and pain and loss of species dying and, you know, infertility being rampant, and all the ways that we're really decimating life on Earth right now, and at the same time to feel into the kind of outrage that actually I think arises through our feet and is a tremendous source of capacity. And the other thing, Michael, that I think is also true is that one of the dangers of learning a lot about the state of life on Earth is that we tend to talk in jargon. And we also tend to think that we approach sharing the news with people with a kind of urgency that I think is actually not inviting to connect with.
Yes.
And I think...
I know, I do.
Yeah, I do too. And so my sense is that what I want to keep practicing is speaking from my heart and meeting people where they are.
Yes.
And not just talking, but listening at least as much as I talk. Because if you meet somebody and you ask them what they really care about, and then you can speak to them through the window that they've opened of what they really care about, you have a much better chance of reaching them and actually connecting.
Mm. That's a good one to remember, too. Speaking from what we really care about in the heart. It's beautiful, Nina. Mm. We're getting close to the end of our time. I'd like you to review a little bit about the workshop, the when, where, how, and give people an opportunity of, since it's down to the wire here, and I'd love to have more people in Sacramento and Nevada County have the opportunity to apply for this. So can you just go over some of the basics again for us?
You bet. Thanks, Michael. The training is called Cultivating Women's Leadership, and the next one is in Sonoma County at the Westerbeck Ranch on April 25th to 30th. And there is actually one more after that this year, which will be in northern New Mexico, July 19th to 24th. But I would so encourage people from that area to apply for the Sonoma County one, because we really try to select women who can be able to stay in close local proximity to each other after going through the workshop.
So you set up support groups.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you have friends nearby.
Yeah.
Who share the vocabulary and the experience. And the way to apply is to either go onto the Bioneers website, which is bioneers.org, and scroll down under programs, and you'll find Women's Leadership. And if you click on that, you'll find the flyer, the PDF, that describes the training. And if you send an email to women@bioneers.org, then someone will send you an application. And the application needs to be in for Sonoma. It needs to be in by next Monday, the 15th. So really, if you're inspired and interested, please email us soon, and I hope you'll act on it. We'd love to have you there.
I hope so, too, and anything I can do to support it. I know it's a wonderful program, as are all the programs that I've ever been involved in around you. And I want to thank you for all our listeners and for myself very personally. Thank you for the ongoing work and just amazing commitment to making a difference, to bring the kind of leadership that's needed to move from a consumer-based society to an earth-based, you know, golden age, really. We have it all available for us. Everything we need is in place except for the will and the leadership to take us there. And you are one of the people that I know are taking us there. So, Nina, thank
Michael,
you.
Oh, Michael, well, you too. And I have to say, it is my honor and my immense joy to get to do this work. So nothing lights me up like it. So I'm really, really grateful and
yes,
so happy to get to have this dialogue with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Conversations is an independently produced program supported by KVMR 89.5 Nevada City and listener contributions. We are committed to bringing you leading-edge thinking in the areas of environmental restoration, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. If you would like to receive our complimentary newsletter, The Well of Light, make a contribution, or order any of our past shows, please call 530-477-7757 or go to our website at rwelistening.net.